Hello and good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Everyday Black History. Happy Tuesday, everybody out there. I know it's still the beginning of the week, and you know, Monday and Tuesdays usually are pretty rough, you know, because it's, you know, Friday seems so long, you know, in the distance. But if you're one of those people who work the weekends and your regular days off are like Tuesday, Wednesday, then this is like your weekend. So if you're one of those people, then, you know, I hope you're having a, you know, good day off. And if you're one of the majority of everybody who has to work on Tuesdays and it's the beginning of your week, just persevere, because before you know it, Friday will be here. And I say that because, you know, as a working man, the beginning of the weeks always suck, you know, Monday and Tuesday. And by Wednesday, you know, you feeling the weekend coming. And by Friday, you're happy because it's Friday and you have, and it's the weekend here and you can hang out or relax or whatever it is. But I say all that to say happy Tuesday, and hopefully your day is going well so far. And your week is going well so far as well. Today on Everyday Black History, as mentioned on our episode yesterday, we are still talking about the black dollar and how important it is for us to put our money into black-owned banks and black-owned financial institutions, credit unions, things of that nature. And today, on we're going to be highlighting one of the, actually the largest owned as of now, the largest black-owned bank in the country, which is One United Bank. And One United Bank is headquartered in Boston, Massachusetts. And it was founded in 1968, and it has the largest total assets of any black-owned bank in the country. And you know, it has a long history as well. It hasn't been around as long as, say, Citizens Trust, which started in 1921. It's been around almost 100 years, but One United Bank managed to start small and grow to what it is today, and as well weather its own Great Depression in 2008 and 2009, when the markets crashed and, you know, we lost many well-known financial institutions like Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers. While all those are closing, One United still continue to thrive and still continue to provide to black communities, not only in Boston, Massachusetts, but also in Miami and in Los Angeles, through merging and acquiring other minority-owned banks to grow its total assets and to expand throughout the country. Now, as mentioned, you know, One United Bank was started in 1968, and it didn't start as One United. It started as Unity Bank and Trust Company. And when it started, it had $1.2 million in capital to start. And its aim was to lend exclusively to local businesses and homeowners in the black community, and to revitalize the Dudley Square neighborhood in Boston. That neighborhood now is known as Nubian Square. But at the time, it was known as the Dudley Square neighborhood in Boston. And its aim was to lend exclusively to businesses and homeowners in that particular area to help build up, you know, that community. And for, you know, 9 years, it continued to do that. But unfortunately, in the late 70s, the bank was considered a failure and it closed. But in its place, another bank emerged, kind of like a phoenix rising from the ashes. I mean, but another bank emerged, and this bank was the Boston Bank of Commerce. And Boston Bank of Commerce continued on with its initial intent, which was community development. And they were able to not only fulfill that initial requirement or initial aim or focus that they had of developing black communities, but they did that by forming partnerships with larger corporations and with government agencies. And so, excuse me, by doing that, they were able to grow and thrive better than Unity Bank and Trust. In fact, the first black the first black American politician who was popularly elected to the U.S. Senate, a man by the name of Edward Brooke. He was one of the chairmen of the board for Boston Bank of Commerce. So, you know, by them making those connections with the government entities and with larger corporations, they were able to get a U.S. senator to sit on their board, which no doubt helped them to continue to thrive. Because, you know, there were always economic hardships during the 70s and during the 80s. But in order for a bank, especially a black-owned bank, which was smaller in comparison to the mainstream banks, in order for those banks to continue to thrive, you needed to make those kind of relationships and partnerships, which was a good move that Boston Bank of Commerce did. Throughout the 70s and throughout the 80s, despite any economic hardships that might have happened in the country, Boston Bank continued to serve the black communities and the local businesses and the homeowners, and continued to provide that financial help for those that were ignored or turned down by more mainstream banks. You know, the Chases, the Citibanks, you know, HSBCs and Bank of America's and all that. But in the 1990s, Boston Bank of Commerce did start to experience some hardship. And it was charged by the FDIC, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, which it is a part of. It was charged by them to increase capital and to improve the quality of its loan portfolio. And a lot of banks were being affected, especially banks in the Northeast, were being affected by an economic downturn of the early 1990s. At this time, the bank had negative equity, which means that it had more liabilities and assets. You know, it owed more money to creditors than what it had. And they had significant asset problems as well. But the bank's fortunes turned around when the current CEO, a man by the name of Kevin Cohey, put in a significant capital infusion, which helped to save the bank initially. Then the current president, Terry Williams, a woman, a sister by the name of Terry Williams, she adopted a new practice, a new strategy of merging with other black-owned banks, other smaller black-owned banks. By doing that, they were able to increase their capital, increase their assets as well, by helping other black-owned banks which were smaller and combining, or maybe other banks that might have been experiencing other, you know, But other black-owned banks that might have been experiencing economic problems or anything like that, they were able to merge and include it in their own portfolio, and they were able to grow by doing that. A couple of these banks were the People's National Bank of Commerce of South Florida, which was the only black-owned bank in South Florida at the time. They, you know, merged with them. And another bank that they merged with was the Founders National Bank of LA. And the thing about the Founders National Bank was that the principal owners of that bank were Magic Johnson, Janet Jackson, and Gerald Busby, who was the president of Motown Records at the time. And they were some of the principal owners of this bank. And they, when they merged with that bank, they were able to vastly increase their assets and their total deposits. Now, by the end of the 1990s, after just 5 years, you know, because Kevin Cohey, when he initially put in a capital infusion to save Boston Bank of Commerce, that was in 1995. So before the year 2000, in just, you know, 4 to 5 years, Boston Bank went from negative equity to having over $150 million in total assets and $125 million in total deposits. And this was before it merged with the Founders National Bank of LA, which had its own assets of $107 million and $98 million in total deposits with 4 branches in the Los Angeles area. So when they merged with that bank, it increased their numbers, you know, almost by double. And it was then after it absorbed those two banks as well as two other black-owned banks in the country, it rebranded itself as what we know today as One United Bank in 2001. Now, the important thing about One United is that they always stress the importance of educating youth on finances, which is important because I know when I was in school, I mean, you know, we didn't get financial education or how to budget or how to save money. You know, my parents, thankfully, you know, taught us that. They taught us the value of a dollar and, you know, showed us to work for things that we wanted. If we wanted, you know, new sneakers or new video games, they would have us, you know, work for it. But a lot of times, you know, children don't learn, you know, how to budget or how to save. And so One United has, they hold an annual financial literacy essay contest, and which it stresses financial literacy to young people. And even Terry Williams, who is the current president of One United, she actually wrote a children's book entitled I Got Bank, What My Granddad Taught Me About Money. And this bank also teaches financial literacy to black youth in urban areas, which is important. And, you know, it's important that, you know, young black, you know, children know, children of color in general know that, you know, you can buy Jordans, but, you know, if you work for it, save up your money, you know what I'm saying? And you can buy your own Jordans. You feel you have a more sense of accomplishment when you save up your money and buy what it is that you wanted, instead of just, you know, going and asking if your parents have the means to go and just buy it for you, going and asking for the money, they give it to you. When you earn it, when you work for it and you earn it, there is a sense of responsibility and accomplishment that's felt. So it's important that One United always teaches that to children and stresses that to young children in the city, urban areas, the importance of financial literacy, because that'll only help them as they get older and become adults, how to save for that house, put away money and budget to get that house, or even if you don't want to have a house, a condo or something that you own, an asset that's going to continue to grow and increase your net worth, you know. Now, One United Bank, as mentioned, has equity investments in many different companies and government entities, and two of those were Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. And in 2008 and 2009 financial crisis, Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae were heavily hit by the financial crisis, and those equity investments that One United had in them were basically worthless. And so they received $12 million in aid from the Troubled Asset Relief Program, which was also known as TARP. And why not? You know, many of these big financial companies that, you know, that were considered too big to fail at the time, they all received billions of dollars in aid. And a lot of these companies were the ones that caused that financial collapse. They were the ones who were involved in the predatory lending and things like that, which caused a lot of people to lose their pensions and lose, you know, their finances. You know, whether you were a regular working person or even a millionaire, a lot of people were affected by the 2008 and 2009 financial crisis. So, but they all got aid. You know, Bush gave them aid, and when Obama first became president, he gave them all aid. So why shouldn't One United get aid? And they only got $12 million, you know, and that $12 million was able to keep them afloat and so that they can weather the financial crisis. And that was in 2009. And over the last 10 years, One United Bank has continued to be profitable and continue to sustain constant growth and to continue to grow with its total assets to where it is now known as the biggest black owned bank and financial institution in the country. You know, And One United has continued to move and with the times and changes in technology. They, you know, upgraded and used customer relationship management software, which allows them to improve customer service and streamline the banking process. They also have made strides into helping people with low credit scores to improve their credit and their credit scores by introducing the Unity Visa Secured Credit Card, also known as the Comeback Card. And with the comeback card, people who apply for that, you know, also receive training on how they can improve their low credit scores. And it also is designed with an app called the Me app that's connected to the Unity card, which allows users who were approved to get the card to open a deposit account where they can put money on the card. And by having a secured card, you don't spend more than you don't have. So instead of having a $2,000 spending limit and, you know, you don't have $2,000 in the bank, but you charge in the card and you run up to $2,000, and now, you know, you can't pay it off, or you're paying the minimum payment and all this interest is adding on. Instead of doing that, you know, if you have $300, you put that on your card and you can't spend more than $300. But at least you know you can pay off that $300. And by, you know, paying off your credit on time like that, it helps to build up your credit, you know. Also to build up your credit score, instead of, you know, constantly being in debt and you only spend what you have. So I don't know anything about the Unity card. Like, I've never used the card and I don't know anybody who use it. And, you know, people may have, you know, good or bad things to say about it, but it was a good initiative to helping people with low credit scores to improve their credit and just understanding how credit works. Now, One United Bank has also been distinguished by the Treasury Department numerous times, which by winning its highest award, which is the Bank Enterprise Award, and they won it for multiple years. And actually from 2004 to 2008, they won it, you know, every year between those years. And they continue to be honored by the Treasury Department for being the best bank. And they also, One United Bank was also the bank that spearheaded, was one of the banks rather that spearheaded the Bank Black movement. I don't know if you remember, back in 2016, as a form of social protest, the Bank Black movement was, it started in 2016, but it gained more traction, I believe, in 2018 as a form of social protest to, you know, put money into black owned banks and start, you know, banking black, which is, you know, has been our theme for the last few episodes. And by doing that, tens of millions of dollars were poured into black owned banks as part of that form of social protest. And it brought a lot of attention to black owned banks. A lot of banks that people didn't know were black owned or didn't even know existed were discovered by the black community. And as mentioned, tens of millions of dollars were poured into black-owned banks. And, you know, more people, like as mentioned, you know, Killer Mike, the rapper and activist, he's big on the Bank Black movement. And he only banks with black banks, you know, which is a beautiful thing. So, you know, One United was part of that social movement and helping people to become more aware of black-owned banks in the United States. But as mentioned, you know, One United, as of now, as of today, they have over $661 million in total assets with six branches throughout the country in Boston, Miami, and L.A. And they are part of they are certified as a community development financial institution by the U.S. Department of Treasury. And as mentioned, in one of our previous episodes, just talking about black-owned financial institutions, you know, with $661 million of total assets and six branches, that's still small in comparison to, East West Bank, which is a bank that services the Asian community. They have over $40 billion in total assets. So, you know, with talking about, you know, banking and black-owned financial institutions, we just want to bring more attention, just like the Bank Black movement did. We just want to bring more attention to black owned banks and financial institutions, and because we want to grow these financial institutions and get them to where they have over $1 billion in total assets, and where they have, you know, instead of six branches, 12 branches throughout the country, you know, and service in the black community. Because as mentioned in previous episodes, these banks are the banks that help to fund, you know, small businesses in the black community, in the black communities that we are known for, you know, hair salons and barbershops, you know, restaurants, insurance companies, you know, things like that. There are black owned insurance companies, as you see in the black community, in a lot of different areas throughout the country. But, you know, sometimes it's hard to get funding to start these businesses. We have a lot of innovative minds in our community, and sometimes it's just hard to get money to start these businesses. You can have a solid business plan and show how you're going to pay the money back. You go to some of the more mainstream banks and they make you jump through hoops that is almost impossible to jump through. But if we have more of our own financial institutions, it'll be easier for us to get the funding that we need so that we can fund some more of our business and, you know, gain that financial independence by being, you know, entrepreneurs. So, you know, today we talked about One United Bank, you know, which is the largest black-owned bank in the country. And tomorrow we'll be covering an industrial bank, which is out in Washington, D.C. And they are continuing to grow as well. And they are continuing to follow the same pattern as other previous banks like One United and Citizens Trust by merging with other black-owned banks that may be on the verge of closing to, you know, keep a black bank in the black community to be able to provide that financial funding and financial help for home ownership and black businesses. So tomorrow we'll be continuing with our highlights on black owned banks, you know, that are still open, and where we should put our black, you know, put the black dollar. Remember, $1.2 trillion, and this is just African American. This is just here in America. We're 13% of the population in this country, you know, 44 million of us in this country, and we have $1.2 trillion in spending. So, as I say, if we can just put some of that into black-owned banks and into black-owned businesses, imagine what we can do, you know, by, you know, moving further. So anyway, that concludes this episode of Everyday Black History. Please tune in tomorrow as we'll be covering another black-owned bank, another black-owned financial institution, and industrial bank in Washington, D.C. So stay tuned for the next episode.